What's going on in the present affects our future, our tomorrows. Did you know that RUC provides help in preparing the tomorrows for our children? We're excited to invite you to the 15th annual RUC fundraising banquet on April 9th, where we'll present The Tomorrow Show. Our banquet will be held at the Villa Milano, with festivities beginning at 5:30, dinner is at 6:30, and the program gets underway at 7. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
Are all the things that are happening in the world just simply random events with no discernible connection? Or is everything connected? We'll talk about that next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the host here on Principles and Policies since the passing of my brother Barry Sheets. Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. There's so much stuff and I am having trouble like approaching it all. Now, as you're aware, we haven't recorded a program in a little while, and there's a reason for that. It has to do with, things that are going on in my family, health wise and that kind of thing. I've explained before, I have a new grandson. I'm very proud of my new grandson, and I'm also proud of my other grandsons. I'm proud of all of them, and also my granddaughters. I have three grandsons and three granddaughters, but my newest grandson came January 16th. He came by emergency C-section at Licking Memorial Hospital, and the same day, he got his first helicopter ride to Children's Hospital in Columbus. I may have talked about this. But he was in Children's Hospital for 11 days. Why was he there? Well, my daughter got toxic from a urinary tract infection. And therefore, Henry, my new grandson, also got toxic from a urinary tract infection. And they were very worried about him. They took him to Children's and artificially lowered his body temperature for about 4 or 5 days. Kept him on a little, what they called a cooling incubator. And kept his temperature down, oh gosh, like 94, 95 degrees. Remember, our normal body temperature is 98.6. And I went in and saw the temperature gauges, and I'm like, holy smokes. It was in centigrade. But I'm like, that's very chilly. I know how I would feel if I was laying on this thing that was cooling me off and keeping me cool, that cool, because it was about 94, 95 degrees, and I'd be freezing cold. But he was in there for 11 days, and then we've been helping out mom and dad and our grandkids while that's going on. Everybody rallied around, and my mother-in-law lives with us, and she's had health issues as well. And I keep getting surprised. I think I'm going to record this program. I go out to record. I get a phone call. You got to come up to the house. She's falling again, or something's going on. You know, emergencies get in the way. Well, I always laugh. You know, when I was getting report cards. Back in the old days, many years ago, now, I always got fails to use time wisely. Well, I've pretty much failed to use time wisely. It's old habits die hard. I'm better at it than I used to be, but I'm not as good as I should be at my age. So I've had a little trouble getting to the microphone. And that's annoying to me, and I know it's annoying to you. For those of you, a lot of people tune in, they like this show, so I've done some, what I hoped was some relevant, reruns. I know last week I did one on, the church and the current situation, and that's a rerun from when Barry was still alive, very early, of 2023, I think in February of 2023 is when that program was recorded. Well, we're still dealing with some of the fallout from some of the things we talked about in last week's show. the complicity of the church and essentially ignoring problems but not dealing with it. And it's interesting. We do need to talk about, for instance, I realize this is maybe slightly anachronistic because it's come and blew up and went away, and that's the Alistair Begg situation. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Alistair Begg got in trouble for something he said actually several months before this all came out. He came out and was asked a question by someone who he actually didn't know, that the scenario was that a woman whose grandson or granddaughter, it's kind of unclear, grandchild was being married to a transgender or in a transgender situation. And that was actually rather unclear from the podcast as well. I've listened to it. It was very unclear, and no details were given. But the situation was that it was a transgender wedding, and the woman was asking whether she should go to the wedding, whether she should participate, you know, as a family member in this wedding. Well, Alistair Begg gave what most Christians, including me, think was a really, 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 really bad answer. And that was that not only should she go, she should take a gift and essentially just go along because it's, you know, it's inevitable that these people are going to quote unquote married. Remember that marriage is defined by God, and it's one man and one woman for life. Now, when I say for life, I have been divorced, that's not God's design. And was I in sin when we got divorced? Yes, my ex-wife and I were in sin when we got divorced. Does that mean that we're unforgivable? No, it doesn't. In fact, I had a pastor who I love dearly who once told me, my current wife and I got married after, my divorce from, my first wife. We've been married now for, let's see, it'll be 38 years this year. Yeah, 38 years. We've been together for 40 years, going on 41, and we've known each other for near like 47 or 48 years, and we're trying to get the dates all worked around. I think about 48 years. So we've known one another for 48 years. We've been together for 41 years, and we've been married for almost 38 years. So it's not like I don't understand the concept. I do. Okay. So in any case, I had this pastor who asked me once. Jenny and I, my wife and I, still kind of laugh about this. He said, "What does it feel like to have brought sin into Jenny's life?" And I always laughed at. I chuckled at that question, and I zapped him back with respect. I said, "Pastor, I think Jenny was doing a pretty bang-up job of having sin in her life before I came along. I know she did because she told me she did. She's explained to me the things. We were both sinners, and we continue to be sinners, but we have grown in our faith, and we understand where our mistakes were made. We understand where the problems are." And so he actually kind of chuckled at that as well. It was a provocative question, and this guy liked to ask provocative questions, and it's not a bad way to go. If you really want to eke out what people are thinking, and I explained to him at the time that I said, "Yeah, I'm aware that this is a problem. However, I don't think that this is a sin from which I will never recover. And I don't think this is a sin from which Jenny will never recover in the sight of Christ." And that's kind of the bottom line here. But with the Alistair Begg situation, This is a little bit like just saying, look the other way and pretend like, you know, don't become the person. They're expecting you to say no, and they're expecting you not to be involved. And go and embrace the situation. And this is what he said. Go and embrace the situation. And go and take a gift and you know, just be loving and kind and that kind of thing. And it's sort of like, well, now, wait a minute. Here's where the problem is. The whole idea, depravity on multiple levels. First of all, it's transgenderism. There is no such thing. You cannot transfer from one gender to another. We've talked about this on shows recently, and if you want to find out about that, I would suggest you go back in our archives. I'm a biochemist. I've talked about this on many occasions. I'm fully aware that men are XY, women are XX. If you can't remember that, that's on the 23rd pair of chromosomes. Men have an X and a Y chromosome. That's called the sex chromosome, and it determines what sexual characteristics that you have. And women have a double X, and I've always said, there's a Y, you're a guy. If you're double X, you're the fair sex. That's how you're remembered. If there's a Y, you're a guy. If there's double X, you're the fair sex. There are all kinds of oddball, genetic anomalies that can happen. But they're exceedingly rare. There are elements on the left who would have you believe that it's very common, and it's not very common. It's somewhere between 1 in 7,000 and 10,000 births that these anomalies pop up. And what do I mean by anomalies? People that have an extra chromosome, much like, for instance, we all know about Down syndrome. Well, that's called trisomy 21 because there's an extra chromosome. Not all Downs is this way, by the way, but this is the most common. There's an extra chromosome on the 21st pair of chromosomes. So instead of having two chromosomes, they have three. And it leads to a number of characteristics, some of them worse, some of them better, and there's different varying degrees of, you know, how it affects people. Some it highly affects people highly, and other people it doesn't affect all that much. It depends on what kind of trisomy 21 you have. Well, the same thing with trisomy. Or we'll call it polysomy, because there can be more copies than just three. Sometimes there are four. Some of these things are fatal. So, believe it or not, on the 23rd pair, if you have certain combinations, it can be fatal. And the child does not survive to adulthood. And in other cases, there are it's so innocuous that nobody knows that they have, for instance, women who have an extra copy of an X chromosome, have trisomy with an extra X chromosome, so they have three copies. Nothing. They're very feminine, ultra feminine. It doesn't affect their fertility. It doesn't affect the way they live. The only way they would ever find out, in fact, is if they went for genetic testing for something else, and they would look at it and say, "My gosh, you have an extra X chromosome." Now, other cases where there are extra Ys, XXY, XYY, have all kinds of different effects on the person. We've all heard of hermaphroditism, which is essentially sexual characteristics of both sexes. That can happen in these polysomies. But again, it's exceedingly rare. So anyone who comes and says, "I think I'm, you know, I have this issue because I'm got this polysomy issue." Well, first of all, ask them to, you know, have you actually had this test run? I've known someone who made this claim, and I said, have you gone and had the genetic testing done? No. Well, why do you think that you're polysomy? Because I have this and this and this and this characteristic. The odds are you do not have this problem. Okay, so let's get back to the argument. There are all kinds of arguments. Basically, Begg said, you may love them into understanding. Okay, folks, you cannot love people into understanding. Now, I'm not saying that this grandmother should abandon her grandchild. That's not it at all. You should continue to have them over and have good familial relations. Have them over at Thanksgiving. Have them over at Christmas. Invite them to come visit you or go visit them. You know, it's one thing for you to refuse to attend a wedding, which a wedding is an acknowledgement of essentially of God, depending on what kind of ceremony you have. And even secular people are being put together under the eyes of God. Now, they may deny that. Atheists would deny. I'm married, but I don't believe in God, and I don't think God put us together. He did. He did. And you are married under his eyes, whether you like it or not. Now, the fact is that you are basically, if you're having a church wedding for under these circumstances, this transgenderism, then first of all, this is not a real church. This is a something masquerading as a church. You have to understand that no one who is a minister of the Lord Jesus Christ can marry two people who are claiming to be something other than what he created them as. Again, this polysomy issue notwithstanding, because sometimes in polysomy, people have a Y chromosome, and remember, XY is a guy. If they have a Y chromosome, but they have two X's, they may exhibit female characteristics. It does happen. Now, what does that mean? They may not know that they have a Y. And generally, if I remember right, the extra chromosomes generally, remember we talked about triple X, doesn't affect their fertility, but these multiples like XYY, XXY, and those very often does affect their fertility. So they don't know that they've got this problem. They just think they're a female, and they might have slightly masculine characteristics and that kind of thing. And we've all seen people like that. May have some feminine characteristics. And don't really know that they have an issue unless they go get genetic testing for whatever reason. Okay, again, back to it. There's nothing wrong with someone who thinks they're a female or a male marrying the opposite sex, and they have this polysomy issue. Nothing wrong with that at all. Why? Because we all shouldn't have to go out and have a genetic test to be able to get married. There would be no point in that. In the old days, if you remember, those of us who were old enough, if you got married before a certain date, I forget, you had to go and have venereal disease testing. You had to prove that you didn't have certain venereal diseases. Okay, fine, but that's not the same thing. Because what that can do is affect children and that kind of thing. A polysomy where you are essentially not quite sterile, but not really, probably not really able to reproduce. That would be, it's a very expensive test. You would keep people from getting married. Are we endeavoring to keep people from being married? No. But we are endeavoring to stop the church and the civil government. I'm still in that camp. I fought for the marriage amendment in 2008. And by the way, so did Alistair Begg. Alistair Begg wasn't active, but he did allow the gathering of signatures for the Ohio Marriage Amendment, which defined marriage as between a man and a woman. Alistair Begg knows that only men and women should get married. And again, there's no sin in marrying people who think that they're men and women. There's no sin in that at all. And them finding out later, there's no sin in that either. In fact, I would encourage people that find this out to stay married. And since they're probably not able to reproduce, adopt children. I have no trouble with that at all. What I do have trouble with is a pastor of Jesus Christ, of a church under the umbrella of being a church of Jesus Christ, would join a person, two people who know that each other is not actually the opposite sex. Or perhaps there's another scenario, appears to be the opposite sex, but has attempted to transform themselves from one sex to another. So in other words, I'm marrying if I were to marry a woman who was actually a man, but had taken the hormones and you know, had the surgery and that kind of thing. That's a sin. If I'm fully aware of this, that's a sin. It's spitting in God's face. It's not spitting in God's face if this is something that's not known and not by both parties. Just to make that clear. This is a difficult subject. This is something you have to think through. Gosh, I'm over 20 minutes into this. I did not mean for this segment to go this long. Cause I have other things I want to cover. But Alistair Begg is wrong on this situation. And there are a number of, and by the way, sadly, he was given the opportunity to clarify. And he did not only did he not clarify, he doubled down on it and stated it again and basically said anybody who was in opposition to his position, he implied that they were some kind of wacko fundamentalist uneducated. And I'm like, well, okay, that's not a way to win friends and influence people. So Alistair Begg, who for the most part is a great teacher. I've listened to him on and off. There are things I badly disagree with him on. And there's other things that, I mean, his soteriology and that kind of thing, you know, his method of coming to the gospel, of coming to Christ. Yes, very good. Very good teacher. And he's a good exegete on the scriptures, but he really lost his way on this. Okay. Now, we talked about taking hormones. What does that have to do with anything? How does that relate? Remember, we opened up with talking about how these things relate. Well, interestingly enough, we have another issue in the news. And by the way, just as a segue, just to insert this in between, you heard the advertisement for Relationships Under Construction at the beginning, and you'll hear it again at the end of this program. What is that? Well, Relationships Under Construction is it's an educational group that goes into public schools and teaches the importance of marriage and commitment and the importance of remaining pure until now. Do they do it on just or do they go in and thump the Bible? Well, you're not allowed to do that in a public school, in case you didn't pay attention. You're not allowed to do that in public school. So what do? They go in and give the most recent scientific evidence which is rife. It's all over the place. For the fact that those who maintain their purity and maintain their integrity and keep their word on that, if they're on their marriage vows and avoiding sex and entangling, not just avoiding sex, but also avoiding being abused by boyfriends, girlfriends. It doesn't have to involve sex. It also involves just simple abuse. Narcissists who manipulate you. Boyfriends who beat girlfriends. Girlfriends who beat boyfriends. Parents who beat children. That kind of thing. This is education to avoid that and helping people get counseling who have been in that situation and want to heal from that. Relationships Under Construction does all that. Now, why are we emphasizing this year? We always emphasize the fundraising, but we really need your help this year. We lost a lot of state funding. They keep promising us that they're going to give us money in the state budget, and we keep not getting it. We were being funded by the through the State Department of Education, and the legislature went through and changed the way the money is allocated. And now, to be sure, Planned Parenthood's getting lots and lots and lots of money. Lots and lots and lots of money from both the state and the federal government. We get a little tiny bit. We get enough to say, well, see, we funded these things. Well, yes, you did, but you did not fund them at the same level that Planned Parenthood got funded. We are a sexual risk avoidance organization. Sexual risk avoidance. And Planned Parenthood is a sexual risk reduction. Do you see the subtle difference there between sexual risk avoidance and sexual risk reduction? I hope you do. Because one says, well, okay, you're going to do it anyway, so just do it as safely as possible. And we're saying, no, if you avoid getting involved in sexual activity and getting involved with people who are abusing you and manipulating you, you are going to live a better life. And we have the statistics to prove that our position is correct. Now, I'm going to have Catherine Wood on here, who's the executive director of Relationships Under Construction. And we're going to talk about what RUC, Relationships Under Construction, does. And we're also going to invite you to come to our banquet. Please, 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 please. April 9th. It's a weird night. I'm aware of that. Normally, we try to do it on like a Friday night. And we just couldn't do it this year for reasons that, well, I don't know why. But this year, it's on Tuesday. Well, please come out to our banquet. Eat the good food. Hear, see our presentation. And donate so that we can help children in the WLRY listening area. We cover Licking, Perry, Fairfield, a little bit of Muskingum, a little bit of Franklin. It's a little radio station with a mighty signal. We have coverage into all those counties, and some of those counties are on the RUC teaching list. So come out and find out what we do. Okay, enough on that. Let's go back to these hormone things. First of all, let's talk about we have some border issues. Now, how does this relate? Well, we'll get to it. I'm a little taken aback because the arrogance that we're seeing from our elites, and by that I mean having to do with the border. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail, which is a newspaper in the United Kingdom. Here's the headline: America's migrant crime wave is past the point of no return. David Marcus reveals how liberal mayors and a Democrat president dismantled the border and now wring their hands over the nightmare they've created. If you're familiar with the Frankenstein story, if you've ever read the book, you'll know that the whole point was that you create that Dr. Frankenstein created this this creature who turned out became a monster. He wanted to create a life that he could turn into this Renaissance man. In fact, there was a made-for-movie TV with David McCallum and years and years and years ago, where he did just that. He created this Renaissance man. Well, this Renaissance man became, because he was raised from the dead, he became more and more and more perverse, and he became more and more and more, he became uglier and uglier. And suddenly, if you know the legend, that this monster is angry at Dr. Frankenstein for creating him, and he seeks him out and chases him all over the world, kills his wife, all that stuff. So again, the monster has been created. We're essentially doing nothing to stop it. We actually have the federal government, and I wanted to bring this up because this is another issue. We had a general, Michael Flynn, a retired general, wrote an op-ed piece in the Western Journal. And it says, the Constitution literally allows Texas to engage in war at the southern border. Here's how. Well, he's correct. It does. if you'll remember, the Supreme Court basically came out and said that, now, a lot of people misunderstood what that Supreme Court decision actually said. What it actually said was that the state of Texas could not stop federal border agents from cutting the razor wire they put up along the border to keep illegal immigrants from coming across the border, swimming across the Rio Grande, and coming into the United States in Texas. And by the way, I once had somebody say, well, Texas isn't the whole border. And I said, no. I'm aware of that. The Rio Grande is only about 60% of the border. Which means that a lot of people come across the border illegally into Texas. But they also come in illegally in Arizona and New Mexico and California. But that being said, the federal government basically told Texas they couldn't stop federal agents from cutting the razor wire. And essentially, Texas, understanding the assignment, said, that's fine. And they just bought more razor wire. And they're distributing it to people who own property along the border. And are saying, go ahead and string this stuff. Now, what's interesting about that is the Border Patrol understands Texas's and the rest of the border's problem. And they've announced that they have no intention of going in and cutting the razor wire. There was also a situation where Texas had put out buoys on the Texas side of the United States side of the Rio Grande that kept people from being able to swim or walk across. The Rio Grande in some spots is very, very shallow, and depending on what time of the year, you can walk across. Which is one of our problems. People think, oh, it's a bit mighty river. And some places it is a mighty river. And other places it's pretty not so mighty. But that was one of the things that are at odds. But what Michael Flynn was talking about, that Texas has the constitutional right to defend itself. And not only that, to petition the federal government to defend it from an invasion, but they are allowed to call out the militia or do whatever means necessary to protect themselves from an invasion. And their argument is that they are being invaded. I'm going to read from Article 4 of the United States Constitution. This is Article 4, Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Now, what legislature has to apply? The state legislature or the state executive can apply for protection against invasion or domestic violence. Well, guess what? You have both of those in this situation. You have people that are coming into this country and creating chaos, lawlessness, and are creating a situation. They're invading. And there's no other way to put that. They're coming over in such numbers that it is an invasion. And they are asking for protection against invasion and domestic violence. Why? And why do we say domestic violence? Because, unfortunately, now I'm not saying that all people who come illegally are necessarily violent criminals. Or even criminals at all. Not necessarily. But there are a whole large proportion of them that are criminal and are violent. What's interesting, there was an interview I saw done, a snippet from an interview on CNN, in which a government official was asked, they were talking about illegal immigration, and illegal immigration gangs were riding around on mopeds and robbing people, bashing them on the head, stealing purses, taking wallets, and it was a gang, and it was a whole group that got together, and they'd go out four or five at a time, but it wasn't just four or five people, it was a whole group of them. Now, what would they do? They'd gather all this money, and they'd go to Florida, and they would spend the money and party and, do the things, relax in Florida. And when they ran out of money, they'd come back. And CNN very arrogantly asked, well, why are they robbing people in Florida? And in this interviewee said, no. And he said, and the CNN correspondent said, well, why aren't they robbing people in Florida too? And this guy very matter-of-factly said, because in Florida, they'll go to jail. That's the bottom line. That's why Texas is essentially was not forbidden from protecting itself. It just was forbidden from interfering with federal officers doing what they're ordered to do by immigration officials and the President of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the problem that we have. The borders are wide open. People are invading. Some of them are violent. And it is creating a situation where, let's face it, one of the problems that this article in the UK Daily Mail is getting at is a whole lot of cities in the United States, controlled by, I'll be quite honest, political liberals. You won't see political conservatives doing this. Political liberals, especially in towns, college cities and big cities, New York City, Denver, Colorado, many cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, name it, in all around the country, in Washington and Oregon, other liberal places have made themselves quote-unquote sanctuary cities. What that means is they didn't really have all that many illegal immigrants in them, but they've decided to make a statement and make themselves havens. Chicago's another one for illegal immigrants who really weren't coming. Well, what's happening? Governors in Texas, governors in California, governors in other states are shipping the illegals who everybody wants them to bear the burden for. They're being shipped to cities like Chicago, like New York, like Boston, like San Francisco, like Denver. Okay, you're a sanctuary city? Here you go. Here are your illegals that you can protect. What's happening in those cities? They're actually contacting governors in those border states and saying, please, 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 please don't send us any more people. You're stretching our infrastructure. Well, guess what? In Texas and Florida and Arizona and New Mexico and California, their infrastructure is also being stretched by an influx of people that they can't handle. And most of them are on, frankly, on relief. They want to come here and get jobs, but when they get here, they don't have a job. Remember, if you want to immigrate legally to the United States, you have to have a job lined up. You can't just come here and say, I'll find work. It's the same way in other countries. You can't immigrate to England. You can't immigrate to Australia. You can't immigrate to Europe and almost any country that's left in the EU. You can't go there unless you have some visible means of support. This is the problem, folks. People are coming into areas like this. Was honestly one of the political considerations, my conspiratorial mind. One of the political considerations is that these northern liberals wanted the Texas system, the New Mexico system, the Arizona system to collapse under the weight of these illegals coming in, and they found a way to relieve that stress on their system. They send them to the people who wanted this policy. And the people that wanted the policy are suddenly find themselves saying, hey, we really don't like this. You should be keeping these people. How dare you send these people to us to stress our welfare? Listen to this. Eric Adams is the mayor of New York City. Eric Adams, here's a quote from this article from the Daily Mail, the UK Daily Mail. Quote, I can't deport. I can't stop people from coming in. He told the Fox Nation on Wednesday, referring to suicidal sanctuary city laws that prevent New York State authorities from cooperating with federal law enforcement. So in other words, because they're a sanctuary city, they're not allowed to cooperate with federal officials to help deport these people, to get the criminal element who's going around New York and riding around on mopeds and robbing tax-paying citizens. They've both the local legislatures and the state legislature have basically said, no, we're a sanctuary. We're a sanctuary for illegal immigration. This article points something out. This is, again, Eric Adams again. The law states that we cannot notify ICE, that's the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Adams whined, I cannot break the law and enforce the law. So in other words, he's saying, I'm in a catch-22. I'm backed into a corner. I cannot break the law and enforce the law. And the article says, how depressingly typical. A mayor who once vowed to protect his city's sanctuary status, and he did. Adams made a big deal about protecting their sanctuary status, now uses the asinine policy as an excuse not to do his job. So in other words, because he's been enjoined from doing this by the legislature, he's not going to do it. He can't, quote unquote, can't do it. So what is New York City becoming in real life becoming a sanctuary for? They're becoming a sanctuary for criminals. New York also has a policy, essentially, like a lot of liberal cities. Prosecutors basically aren't prosecuting crimes. And when they do, judges will they don't ask for bail. So people who have been involved in violent crime, aren't arrested and then immediately released, sometimes without charge, sometimes with a court date, which they, because there's no real penalty for it, they skip. Why would you not skip a court date where there's really no penalty and there's no incentive for you to come to? So they've got a lot of people who are scofflaws, and sometimes the judges are so arrogant that they say, see, we've cleared our docket. No. Folks, basically, and that pops up in this article. Why, you ask, wasn't Darwin Andre Gomez Izquiel behind bars awaiting trial? That's a criminal who was basically let go because Manhattan's fanatically progressive district attorney released Gomez and his accomplices without bail. This is a man who was involved in a gang attack and with shoplifting. And while he was shoplifting, store employees were punched because they tried to stop the shoplifting. This is why, by the way, when you hear that businesses in inner cities like New York, like Chicago, like Oakland, California, like all these places, why stores are closing, why grocery stores, department stores, places, Walmarts are closing. Why? Because they're being robbed blind. You can go into, there are places where you have to go into, if you have to go into Target, everything is behind a locked door, a plexiglass locked door. Why? Because so much stuff is being stolen that they can't afford to keep the place open. There's something wrong with the way these cities are thinking about crime. They've fallen into a trap, has to do with, crimes, not allowing people to steal is racist. One of the stupidest things I think I've ever heard. But these policies are creating places that are havens for criminals and are essentially jail cells for working taxpayers. Here's a very important statement in this article. When Democrats start to sound like Republicans, you know something has gone very, very wrong. And what do I mean by that? Democrats are starting to say, we can't take this. We have to revive our legal system, get our legal system back in order so that we can start to prosecute these criminals and get them to immigration and deport them. Or put him in jail, then deport them. And hey, no kidding. Conservatives have been saying this forever. And you'll get no better illustration of some of the problems that we're dealing with this issue than with the Lakewood church shooting. This is Joel Osteen's church down in the Houston area, Lakewood Church. Unless you've been living in a cave, you know that someone went in there with a rifle and a child, towing along a child, and oddly was not stopped directly at the front door. There was a security guard there and was allowed to pass. I don't know exactly why. There had to have been a reason, and it may have been at gunpoint. I've been able to get to determine exactly what happened. But I've been reading some of the articles down in the Houston Chronicle. And there are a lot of reasons why that will mostly be kept a local story. Sad to say. That will be kept a local story, and you will see it fade away, just like down in Nashville, and also one in Louisville. If you don't remember that, the Louisville bank shooting, where the fellow went into the bank and shot the place up, and he did so because he wanted he specifically chose a rifle that he knew would get a lot of headlines, and he did it knowing full well he'd be killed. He did it to ensure that people would be there would be cries for gun control, among other reasons. Obviously, he was mentally unbalanced. That's the Louisville shooting. In the Nashville shooting, we had a person who, again, we're going back to transgenderism. This person was a female who was attempting to transform themselves into a male, which, by the way, you can't do by just swallowing a bunch of hormones, taking hormone injections, swallowing pills, surgery. It doesn't matter. Remember, if there's a Y, you're a guy. If you're double X, you're the fair sex. You cannot change genetic makeup with hormones and surgery. Sorry, folks. Those of you who think you can do that, you are living under a grand delusion. Okay. The shooter in the Lakewood Church shooting was a woman who at times and very possibly was going through therapy to transform themselves into a male. Now, what does that mean? If you're going to do that, you, again, as we've mentioned before, you load up on testosterone. Well, women, folks, are not designed to handle as much testosterone as it takes to bring on male characteristics. It's bad enough when men have all this testosterone floating around. We've all seen people who are hyper testosterone. In fact, we all know the term roid rage. Well, what does roid rage mean? Steroids. What do steroids do? Steroids basically, it's hard. It causes a production of hormones. And a lot of those hormones are testosterone. And we've all seen guys who were on these steroids and got themselves all pumped up, and they're angry and they're violent. Why? Because it's not so easy for men to take in huge amounts of testosterone as well. There are also men who need a little bit of testosterone supplementation because for whatever reason, they're not producing, especially older men, they're not producing as much as they probably ought to be. Nonetheless, women are not physically designed to, their brains are not the same. Their brain chemistry is not the same. No matter what you've heard, their brains are not the same. They're not designed to handle that much testosterone. And what happens? They go insane like the Nashville shooter. Now, I can't say so in this case. I highly suspect that this is a testosterone overdose. You know, a testosterone failure to handle it properly. But there are other reasons why, beyond transgenderism, that this will, the news media really desperately wants to ignore it. First of all, as we've said, transgender woman to man, that's a box that gets checked. The person is mentally ill, and that is well known. That's come out in the record. I had to laugh when I read the Houston Chronicle that basically tried to claim that this woman had obtained this weapon legally. Anyone who knows anything about the law regarding this, anyone who has ever bought a gun knows that when you go to buy the gun, there is a form. You cannot purchase a gun if you have been treated for a mental illness or are being treated for a mental illness. Now, what that means is, no, she did not obtain the gun legally. Okay, nice try, Houston Chronicle, but nope. She may have stolen the gun or borrowed it, which is, again, is not also not legal. She's just not allowed to be in possession of it. Okay, let's go on because we're running out of time. This will not get much play because a bad guy with a gun was stopped by a good guy with a gun. She was engaged by two different off-duty officers who were armed in the church. One was a Texas Alcohol Control Board employee, and one was an off-duty local policeman, I believe. So that doesn't fit the narrative. In other words, listen, folks, if you are part of a church and you do not have people armed in your church as protection, you are making a huge mistake. You honestly need to have armed guards in your church. We're getting to the point where people who of this type, who are angry and insane, get a gun illegally and will come into your church because you stand four square against essentially what they are, and they will attempt to wipe out as many of you as they can. I'm sorry to sound paranoid. These are the facts. There are people that hate us. Hate us as Christians. Okay, a bad guy with a gun stopped by a good guy with a gun. This person was an illegal alien, as we've talked about before. This is she had a criminal record as long as your arm, and that's part of her mental illness. She's been involved in robberies, and this woman had been basically force committed to a mental health institution. And the Houston Chronicle still trying to claim that she purchased the gun as legally. I don't think so. She was prior arrest for assault, forgery, marijuana possession, theft, evading, and unlawful carrying of a weapon, according to Texas Department of Public Safety records. Folks, this person had no business with a gun. She has no business being in the country. She's here illegally. She's an illegal immigrant from El Salvador. Even if she came legally, she has committed enough crime that she should have been deported as a habitual criminal. She appears to be. Here's another reason why it won't make the stay in the news. Muslim convert from Catholicism. It was said early on that she had Free Palestine written on the butt of the rifle on the stock. No, what it had was a Palestine sticker. She had put a Palestinian sticker in. She appears to have been a Muslim convert from Catholicism. And again, that lengthy criminal history. Look, the fact is that this person checked all the boxes that the news media doesn't want. They desperately want all mass shooters to be white Christian males with a history of, well, A, they want them to have an AR-15, and they want them to have histories of racist activity and that kind of thing. Meanwhile, we have a judge who apparently was a complete idiot down there. Pardon me, but that's what it's about. There was a judge, a Harris County judge, Lena Hidalgo, is calling for investigators to look into whether or not the shooting was a hate crime targeting Hispanic people. What? The woman who committed the crime is Hispanic. It was a hate crime. Yes, it was an attempted hate crime. Who was the hate against? Christians. It was a hate crime against Christians. Flat out. So, this judge is completely loopy. Well, look, I'm out of time. I hate this, and I wanted to go more in depth into this story, but I used up a lot of my... Are these things connected? Obviously. They have threads that run all the way through them. All these things have threads, common threads that run through them. Are all things connected? Yes. How are they connected? Through the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and the world that we live in. That is His. And yet we continue to do everything outside, inside our own power and outside His. That being said, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.
What's going on in the present affects our future, our tomorrows. Did you know that RUC provides help in preparing the tomorrows for our children? We're excited to invite you to the 15th annual RUC fundraising banquet on April 9th, where we'll present The Tomorrow Show. Our banquet will be held at the Villa Milano, with festivities beginning at 5:30, dinner is at 6:30, and the program gets underway at 7. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.